holiday shoppers, there are now only 0 days left until Christmas Day. Today is Christmas Day, and I think you know what that means. It's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday madness all year round. Hi, my name is Joseph Wade. I'll be your host for this evening. Here with me tonight are my good friends and co-hosts, Johnny Five, the human robot.
Yeah, I'm here.
Every Christmas, it's the same. John is lethargic and sad around the holidays, and we have to brighten his day with an hour-long rant about nothing. Karen Five is here as well. Karen, what's going on?
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas.
There you go. See, somebody's got the Christmas spirit around here. And Mr. Bradford's back as well. Brad, hey, what's happening? What the hell?
I just caught some sort of fish. That's all.
Oh, all right. I thought maybe you had like a morning zoo soundboard.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Bang a gong.
Merry Christmas, friends. And since Brad cracked open his, I guess I'll crack open mine.
Can check. What's everybody working with this? We it's Christmas morning. We're all gathered around the Yule tree. What's everybody working with?
No beverages for me right now.
That's okay.
J-Man, what about you?
Hi, I'm here.
Okay.
He's still very sleepy.
Okay, well, Karen, you got to get him some Mountain Dew or something, because we got to get his energy levels up. Brad, yeah. What are you working with today on this fine Christmas morning?
I've got a Narragansett.
Ooh. Nice.
Yep. Fancy pants. Thank you. I know. No, which, not at what all. About you?
I'm drinking a holiday beer from one of our local breweries. If I'm allowed to say it on the show, I don't know. I don't know if y'all will let me.
It's up to you. That's up to you whether or not you want a brick thrown through your front window.
Yeah.
I mean, if anybody's throwing the brick, I feel like it's going to be John. I'll go ahead and say it. It's a Natty Greens Red Nose Winter Ale. It's one of my favorite beers of the year, and it's finally here, and I'm so happy.
Fantastic.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. Did everybody get what they wanted for Christmas?
Oh, yes. Yes, it's been a wonderful Christmas.
Good. Good, good, good.
Let's say I did. Because
are you breaking kayfabe and you're not meaning to tell the audience at home that we're recording this before Christmas?
I didn't say it, you did. But I did kind of insinuate
before
it.
Before Christmas?
Yeah, you did.
What?
Whoops-a-doodle. Yeah. No, my Christmas was fantastic and I got everything on my wish list.
There you go.
But you know what?
There you go.
You know what? I'm so excited to be here with you guys today because now that it's Christmas Day, we here at Christmas Creeps have been talking about Christmas all year round, and I feel like it's time for us to take a break and do something a little bit different. We did this last year. We did it the very first year we were on the show, and like we replaced people. No, people celebrate Christmas in July, but what we like to do every Christmas is celebrate July at Christmas. So this year, we all sat around the campfire and watched Team America, World Police. Why did we do this?
Who chose this? Who do I have to blame for this?
That might be a Johnny Five joint.
I figured as much, but I didn't want to say anything.
That's all right.
Well, yeah.
I'll blow up a spot.
A little bit later, we're going to be talking all about Team America, World Police. But first, there's one quick item of business I want to get to. Which is that we've kind of talked about it for years and made fun of it, but I finally attended our local SantaCon last night.
Ooh.
As we record this, it's last night. Yeah, it was definitely Christmas Eve, you guys.
Absolutely.
But, you know, SantaCon is sort of the annual nationwide Santa-themed bar crawl where people go downtown, dress up like Santa, have a good time going door to door at all the local breweries and whatnot and having a quick beverage and then going along their way. My brother Dan and I went out to our local SantaCon for the first time. And trip report, guys, it was fine. It would have been more fun if there were more of us there because it seemed like the kind of thing where everybody takes their friends and everybody parties with their friends and no one else. Or maybe that's just the introvert in me because I kind of felt like we were just sitting there drinking by ourselves in a giant crowd of Santa hats.
Aw.
Did you wear a Santa hat?
Oh, yeah. Like they, oh, okay. they gave out Santa hats at the event for everybody that showed up.
Awesome. Was anybody dressed in like full Santa rig out though?
Oh yeah, there were a couple of legit like real Santas.
Ooh, there was one dude.
I put this on my Twitter account. I was one dude was decked out in a Santa Claus like business suit, like a red business suit with like Santa print on it.
Oh my god!
And when I saw him walk into the bar, I just like instinctively shouted out, "Yo, business Santa!" And then he yelled back, "Business Santa, get shit done." And then we high-fived, and then he just kind of went on his way.
All right.
I mean, that sounds like a pretty magical, like, interaction to me.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't seem to me like this SantaCon was it wasn't much of a party, like you saw in, like, Bad Santa 2, where it was just this big, like, techno dance party in the middle of the town square. It was just kind of people going bar to bar with their friends, having some drinks and wearing Santa hats.
Yeah, it's just Santa bar crawl.
Yeah.
Are you meaning to tell me that movies aren't exactly like real life, Joseph?
You know what? I hate to break it to you, Brad, but dem's the breaks.
Oh no!
Movies make things look cooler than they are, so that you'll spend money on them.
I don't believe that.
I'm here to tell you, friends, it's true. I'm not saying SantaCon is a con, but they did charge us $10 to wear Santa hats and go drinking on our own dime.
Oh, wow.
But it went to a good cause, so I'm not complaining too much.
Oh, it was for a charity thing?
Yeah, it was for a local charity. So that's fine.
Oh, how's that going for it? Our local one is just, everybody seems to be in like full Santa rig out from the pictures that I looked online. I never go, and I'm not going to be in town the weekend that it is, but it's just full on people in Santa rig out and they cause problems.
Yeah. I was kind of hoping for more of a party vibe, but you know, can't have everything.
I just want to say, so you mean the people in DC put on a shitty Santa con like they put on a shitty everything else? You know, what a surprise.
It's shocking. It's the most A-type people doing the most A-type party. It's pretty terrible all around.
Yeah.
Sorry to bring the holiday episode to a halt here, guys. Jeez. I think we're all sort of Christmased out. But that's A-okay, because we're not talking about Christmas anymore, because we have some very particular patriotic business to discuss tonight. So, Team America World Police, and I feel like we're going to get into a lot of, I don't want to say political territory, but yeah, probably.
Of course we're going to get into political territory with this fucking movie.
I mean, it's kind of unavoidable. 2004 film from Trey Parker and Matt Stone, the creators of South Park. As far as I'm aware, I know, the last movie they've made, they haven't made a movie since this, for better or worse.
Was Bigger, Longer, and Uncut before this, I'm guessing?
Yes.
I don't know much about South Park.
Yeah, that was 2001.
Park, that was 99.
South Park timeline. Good lord.
So basically, the reason they haven't made a movie since this movie is because they basically hated the shit out of making this movie. And
damn.
Having watched it again for the first time in maybe a decade, I can sort of see why, because so much of this movie is like the attention to like puppetry details and things that would drive a regular person insane.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have any praise to give this film, it's that like all the puppetry related stuff is still great. I'm like legitimately impressed that this movie exists at all. But then we get into sort of the jokes and the story, and that's where things kind of start to fall apart.
I do feel like this movie is like on a technical level like very well made, like, you know, especially with all the puppetry and everything.
And honestly, I feel like the jokes in this film that do work are the ones that are all like the physical gags related to puppets doing puppet stuff.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I was going to make this point later, but it is the puppet related visual gags are the best part of the movie and pretty much the only part that's aged well, I would argue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say this just blanket about Trey Parker and Matt Stone. They are at their best when they are just doing broad genre parodies of basically anything, That's My Bush is probably the funniest thing they've done, full stop, because it's just they decided to make a shitty sitcom about George W. Bush, where their focus was mainly that it was a shitty sitcom, not that it was about George W. Bush.
Yeah, it's that show's weirdly like apolitical.
Yeah, it's if you look on the Wikipedia page for it and the episode summaries, every episode has like a summary of saying what's the political event in this episode, what's the sitcom cliche they're parodying, because every episode has both.
Yeah,
and if I remember correctly, like that's kind of how they made this show. Like they made a list of sitcom cliches and then political like talking points, and they just sort of mixed and matched which ones might go best with which, and just like, all right, fine, fuck it, let's make the episode where the boss comes over for dinner, and also let's make it a show about abortion discussions. Like, all right, sure, why not?
Yeah, pretty much.
Jesus.
When they originally conceived the show, it was just assumed that Al Gore was going to win, and it was going to be called Everybody Loves Al, and they just did a last minute kind of course correction, and the show didn't suffer at all from it.
Of course,
it's the same show.
Yeah.
The weird thing about That's My Bush, though, and I hate that I still remember so much about the show, but, like, that was my first exposure to the character of Karl Rove. Like,
oh, really?
The political, you know.
Just, like, in person. General, as a human?
Yeah, as a political figure, like, Karl Rove is a person. So whenever I hear about Karl Rove, like, in the news, or I see, like, he's on, like, Meet the Press or whatever, I immediately think of Kurt Fuller, who played him on the show, and not the actual Karl Rove.
Being somebody completely unfamiliar with That's My Bush, did it suffer from the same Parker Stone, the truth is in the middle situation that they so often arrive at?
No, they were too busy doing sitcom parodies to actually try to make a political point, and that's why it's good.
Oh, all right. You have my
attention.
The only
thing that killed that show was a little thing called 9/11.
Yeah, pretty much.
I see.
And the political sort of landscape flamed out from there, and that's kind of where Team America comes in.
I would be comfortable with saying that 9/11 ruined Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
It ruined a lot of people, but yeah, I'm sorry.
Because their work before that was pretty apolitical and just kind of silly. And after that is kind of when they turned into basically Democrats who like war, aka libertarians.
Yeah, like they can deny it all they want, but they're basically libertarians.
But like, and even within South Park, my favorite South Park episode by a long shot is Aspen.
Mm-hmm.
I think I mentioned that before. The one where it's just a parody of 80s teen movies,
right? And like, when they're just working in like a pop culture framework, that's when they work best. When they have to like make a larger point about some cult like hot button issue or a political statement, that's when they sort of put their foots in their mouths, or they stumble and make, you know, they piss off somebody and or everybody.
It's unfortunate because they seem to really love doing that too, but it's not like the best, because really it just seems like they're just kind of huge nerds, especially about like musical theater.
Another thing is the episode they did after the 2008 election. The episode it was about the election, but it didn't really have anything to do with the election. It was a heist movie, pretty much.
Yeah, it was a heist movie where the sort of the political undercurrent was like Democrats are sore winners, which seems strange to me.
No, the political undercurrent to that was just that Randy Marsh is an asshole.
That's the one where he's singing Celebrate by Kool and the Gang, but he replaces Good Times with a Celebrate.
Okay. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I still think about that sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say they put those words in Randy Marsh's mouth as opposed to any other character for a reason. Randy Marsh is their, like, asshole mouthpiece.
Mm-hmm. And that's Trey's dad, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like that character's supposed to be like a caricature of his own dad, played by Trey himself.
Yeah, right.
But so Aspen is actually a pretty good touch point for this conversation, because certain things about Aspen show up in Team America World Police. Specifically, the montage song where originated in that episode.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So, and we can jump around, but I feel like, I don't know. The plot of Team America is fairly simple and straightforward, and I don't think it warrants a whole lot of like ground to cover.
Discussion.
I think we need to
discuss one point at the get go.
Okay.
Because I'm pretty sure there might be someone asking, like, you guys know this is a satire, right? Like, why are you talking about it in like the jingoistic bullshit corner? And my response is like, is it a satire?
Right.
What is it a satire of exactly?
Like, it's making fun of like shitty Michael Bay action movies, obviously, but like, as for the actual message, like patriotic message behind it, for what that's worth, I think that's just actually what Trey and Matt at least thought at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because yes. they've echoed that same sentiment more than a few times in South Park, that not only is America the best, but one of the things that makes America the best is the ability to do whatever the fuck we feel like, as long as we feel bad about it afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it doesn't even have the remorse angle going.
Because like that was when the entire thing episode where Cartman went back in time and he discovered the secret to America was that we could have our cake and eat it too. We could just do whatever horrible like war crime atrocity shit we wanted, as long as some people argued about how we shouldn't, it was okay to do it.
Right. Yeah. The gist of it is that Team America is sort of an independent like police. They call themselves Team America World Police. It's this independent task force of. They're basically the Thunderbirds. I mean, it's a whole parody of the Thunderbirds TV show from the 60s with all the puppets and everything. It's like the five members of the team that go around and they fight just quote-unquote terrorism. And it's just used as a blanket term to fight anybody who basically they don't like.
Yeah, and, right. And the entire motivation for the terrorists is just that they hate freedom.
Yes.
Right.
There's no sense of any sort of like actual political underpinnings to anything. It's just they're just mad about freedom.
Meaning that in the movie that's what the terrorists are against, or that's what Team America says the terrorists are against?
Yes.
Both.
Because the thing is, you gotta remember, like, this was produced in, you know, the first, like, Bush administration era, where it was, like, immediately post 9/11, and the whole conversation was, they hate our freedoms, full stop.
Literal words, yes, that the president said. Obviously, we have a new orange one who says even dumber things,
right.
But...
Yeah.
Oh, my
God. There's a whole David Cross bit about it. But anyways...
I think it was.
It was David Cross, right? He's talking about that specific speech.
I'm going to Google this right now because I need to find out. Terrorists hate our freedoms. And let's just see what comes up.
Oh, I think it's just freedom singular.
Well, no,
because
it's actually literally a quote from George W. Bush as quoted by freedoms, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, freedoms?
And then he goes on to list the freedoms. Freedom of religion,
freedom
of speech, and so forth. The point being, Team America is out to basically stop terrorists from blowing up the world, but the joke is that Team America, in doing so, blows up most of the world themselves. Like, the opening scene is takes place in Paris, where an exchange is going on, is taking place between a group of terrorists. The most caricature-ish... Middle Eastern terrorist you can possibly imagine.
Yeah, I mean, we should lay this out there. The movie basically uses almost no actual foreign language, despite taking place in multiple different countries. I think the most you hear of any language other than English is a Spanish character repeating "No me gusta" a bunch, and that's the only Spanish.
Weren't they speaking French at the beginning?
Yeah,
well, were they, or were they, just going ho 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 ho?
No,
yeah,
no.
They spoke.
Yeah.
There are a couple lines that are real French, like the lady says "Mon Dieu," like "Oh God," when
right.
She
but overall
sees the
it's all
with
like
a briefcase and stuff
level
like that.
Foreign language,
yeah.
And any of the characters that are quote unquote villains or like the terrorist groups get no benefit of any language whatsoever. Like the Korean that they do is not Korean, and
it's just all racist like stereotypical noises, like. I mean, just to lay it out, the terrorists all speak like, they all just literally speak like Durka Durka Jihad. That's like, if you ever hear people like say that, that's kind of where that joke comes from, is Team America.
Yeah, and in fact, their country is called Durka Durkistan.
Yes, that too.
Yeah.
And while we're on this topic, we're going to go ahead and just say that Kim Jong-il is one of the main characters, and it's 2004, and they do the R to L replacement for him. Throughout the entire movie, including in musical numbers. even though I believe that Korean has L phenomes and a Korean-speaking person does not even
that's Japanese. Kind of might be intentional on their part as well, because...
Oh, no, it's absolutely intentional.
No, no, what I mean is the idea, the confusion is intentional, because one of the points they were also making in... I remember watching the making of on the DVD at one point, and they were saying that every foreign country is just, like, a very shallow baseline absolute idiot American's understanding of that country.
I get what that's what they're doing with it. In fact, there's one really good visual gag in the Paris scene where the cobblestone street is actually croissants.
Yes.
I missed that.
Probably my favorite, like, not remarked upon visual gag in the entire movie. Is that there's like little croissant sculptures in the cobblestone in the Paris scene. Like every cobblestone is a croissant. It's quite good. And I get that it's supposed to be like a wallpapering pastiche of, because every time it introduces a new location, and I think this is actually pretty funny, when it has the location, it references how many miles it is east or west of America.
Yes.
Not just that, but just when you see the overhead shots of Paris, like, apparently the Louvre, Arc de Triomphe, and Eiffel Tower are all on the same, like, street.
Yeah.
Literally next to each other. Yes.
And they intentionally did that with a lot of it, of just, like, what is the most basic idiot thing the average stupid American will know about this? That's what's all together. And I think that's what's playing with the confusion between, like, Koreans and Japanese and Chinese, because at the end of the movie, the character being held captive is dressed in like a traditional Chinese dress.
I was actually going to remark upon that as well. She's in a qipao, even though qipao are not a traditional dress in Korea at all.
Right, I mentioned that when we were watching it.
I think that's just the joke. Is that the movie is stupid and doesn't know the difference.
And I get that, and I think that at least is clever, but I don't think the RL replacement, I don't know.
Well, okay.
Discussion to be had whether or not that
that's just pure good old-fashioned 2004 America as well.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to get at. And,
okay, so part of the thing is, like, you're saying it's kind of a parody of the way most Americans view the world in 2004, and... I get the feeling that a lot of people took that and like missed that was even the joke, because like how many times have you heard like the America fuck yes song just used unironically like out in the world since this movie came out, and the whole Durka Durka thing after this movie came out, and like so much of this movie seemed to have flown over the heads of the people that it was kind of making fun of. To the point where I think they just unironically thought, like, oh yeah, this is fucking awesome, and this is exactly the kind of movie for us. But like, I don't know.
Go ahead.
I will say, like, all jokes aside and everything, they made an extremely competent like action movie. Like, so yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised that it appealed to like a lot of fucking people, even ones that didn't really like get it.
Well, I'm not saying they didn't get it. I'm just saying like it appeals to the very people that it's making fun of, so it makes me wonder how good the satire even was, you know?
Exactly. When your satire is just unironically liked, it doesn't matter what that you were trying to make satire. Like, you have to judge it on face value, which is why we're watching this.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that is another discussion to be had about what happens when satire... These people know that it's satire, but they're using the fact that it exists as an excuse to unironically say... or do or replicate these things.
Right.
Like, I wouldn't say that a lot of people that unironically like this don't know, are too stupid to think it's satire. It's that the merit that it exists gives them license to wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say, oh, I'm doing this ironically, but they're not actually appreciating this ironically. And this gets us into a whole level of political problems with what's going on today. Yeah. With the whole 4chan generation where, you know, it may have started as ironic racism, but it actually ends up engendering real feelings of this.
It's really weird because 4chan is both the place that the phrase ironic shitposting is still shitposting was born and the place it is most ignored.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah. It's like, oh, just kidding. Not really, you know.
Yes, it's sorry, not sorry, the movie, basically.
It's using the veneer of irony to kind of bring it back around to not irony.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's boy. If that's not like the South Park ethos in a sentence, I don't know what is.
It's pretty much, yeah.
To bring one more thing into the fold, it's pretty much one of my favorite Onion articles, where it's I believe it's called "Ironic Porn Purchase Leads to Unironic Ejaculation." Look it up. We should put it in the show notes. It's hilarious. A fantastic article.
Oh, that's going in the show notes.
If you haven't read it, it's amazing. Okay. Anyways,
all right. So
I've gotten too far afield.
So let's just get into the plot of this movie a little bit. Team America has to hire an actor to portray a terrorist so that he can infiltrate the terrorist network to find out who is buying weapons of mass destruction from whom for what purpose. So they go and they find a stage actor on Broadway named Gary Johnston, who I immediately thought was named after Gary Johnson, the political candidate, but apparently not.
I want to back up for a second. Yes. I want to back up for a second and focus on the Paris prologue, because the Paris prologue is like a 5-minute like summary of Michael Bay's entire career.
Oh yeah.
And it is amazing.
Sure, yeah, yeah. And it's the whole movie in like 5 minutes too.
Yeah. So you start out with the Team America is, you have Joe, who is the Nebraska quarterback and therefore the leader.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and they have a character who straight up announces this, that's his character. He's the quarterback and therefore the leader. There is a psychic from the Berklee School of Clairvoyance or something like that.
Sarah.
Yeah, Sarah. There's Lisa, who is the blonde girl.
Right.
And that's her character. And then there's Chris, who is the best martial artist, the best martial arts expert Detroit has to offer.
Yeah.
But he's still white, because this is, after all, America.
Yeah, everyone's white, and the leader is white and blonde.
Right. And then
there's Carson, who's the guy who's about to get killed.
Yeah. What's her name? Lisa's fiance for about half a second.
Yes. At the end, once they stop the terrorists by destroying the Arc de Triomphe, Eiffel Tower, and the Louvre, he proposes to her, and then a terrorist jumps out of the fountain like at the end of Die Hard and kills him. And his dying words are like four different clichés.
Yeah.
Yeah. He stops just sort of doing the Yoda thing of saying, "There is another Skywalker."
Yeah.
But like my favorite gag in the entire film is like, they're chasing the terrorists around the square, and Joe's got a rocket launcher, and he shoots the rocket launcher, and the rocket misses the terrorist, hits the Eiffel Tower. The Eiffel Tower collapses, destroys the Arc de Triomphe, and then Joe just goes, "Damn, I missed him."
Yeah. And then, like, he runs into the Louvre, and they've just fucking like bombed the Louvre.
And then there's that great little shot of like all of the Parisians just kind of looking around in horror.
Yeah.
Like, God, oh my God, what have you people done? And like, yep, that's the joke. That's America.
And the Americans are just like fucking proud of what they've done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that really is the whole movie in a nutshell. Like, I feel like if Team America had just been like that 5 minutes short, it would be legendary. But then the movie goes on for another 85 minutes.
Yeah.
Right. Can I just like say, though, out of this entire movie, which we'll eventually like get to the rest of the plot, there is one overarching plot that they didn't throw in until the fucking like very end of the movie and the end credits, which I think is just great.
And what's that?
The Kim Jong-il, spoiler alert, he fucking dies. But when he dies, it turns out there's just a fucking like cockroach inside a human body.
Yeah.
Like from space, from another planet, and there is like a fucking war between cockroaches and bees on their planet.
Yes.
Yeah, that you only find out about like in a song that sung during the end credits.
Exactly.
And it includes some of that the Trey and Matt standby of just coming up with goofy names for alien things.
Yeah, and
they
and
just fit up like a dozen of them in the song with no explanation. Of
the
just,
whole
like...
the whole reason, though, that they came to Earth to try to like destroy everything is because they need another planet to live on. And it's like, that's actually like kind of a fun, stupid plot.
Yeah,
like why wasn't that the movie?
Yeah. But at the same time, I think it's really fucking funny that's all there is to that.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't need much more than that, really.
Right.
So they recruit. So, yes. They recruit Gary, and they tell him that they're gonna need him to infiltrate the terrorist network in Durka Durka. No, it's in Cairo.
I just want to point out they need him for his acting skills, and they say acting with like a capital A, where like it's a skill in Skyrim or something like that.
Like he's got the pro level acting ability.
You just gotta like grind up your levels a little bit.
Mm-hmm. You just gotta star in Lease until you're legendary rank.
Yes.
And he explains his acting ability is driven by the fact that when he was a kid he was doing acting at the zoo by walking on the railing to the monkey exhibit, and then he fell in.
So he's the reason Harambe's dead.
Yeah, he's the reason Harambe's dead. He fell in. His brother jumped in after him, and the monkeys all killed his brother before the zookeepers could gas them all.
Yeah,
he says.
But at least this great like running gag where like every time they ask him like what he's in this for, he looks off or no that he's got to act. He looks off into the middle distance, and you know, you just hear like chimpanzees, like monkey noises and people screaming as he remembers this horrifying thing.
Yes.
Every time the movie makes a joke that has nothing to do with like the plot, it's great.
Yeah.
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 It's pretty good.
When they're just parodying the genre, it's great.
Yeah, like that's what they do well. And if they had somebody like to sort of steer them in the right direction, I feel like this movie would have been better.
More or less.
Yeah, like, I told Jonathan when we were watching it, it really is funnier than it has any right to be, because it's also extremely stupid, but some stuff is, like, just hilarious because they're, like, really funny dudes when they don't have their heads up their asses.
Yeah.
And then some stuff is just, like, kind of funny in spite of itself. Like, it's like, I don't know. It's just so stupid.
They give Gary a let's see, how do I put this?
They Valmorification is what they call it, which is also what they call like any of the times their car transforms, like rockets shoot it, like it gets like rocket boosters and shit.
Right. Yeah. So they basically put him under like cosmetic surgery to make him look like a terrorist, quote unquote. And but they do this amazing like montage where you can just imagine what they're doing to him, and it just keeps cutting to like the tray of instruments with like bloody implements and stuff on him, and they just keep grabbing more shit and doing stuff to him. And then when you finally see like the final reveal, they just painted his face brown and then stuck like. Glued wool to his face.
There's this like patchy, like scraggly hair. He looks like a fucking mangy dog.
Like I almost made a South Park reference. Like it looks like they just like glued pubes to his face.
Pretty much, yeah. And it's like, oh.
And then the joke is, oh yeah, the terrorists totally buy it.
Right.
Yeah. And so they have the secret infiltration mission in Cairo, which all five of them go on, not just the guy in disguise.
Yeah.
And they literally, like, walk him up to the door.
And they're all, like, wearing their fucking Team America, like, jumpsuits. Which the men wear blue ones and the women wear pink ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it works.
Pink camo.
Karen says as she's using a pink body pillow.
So.
And they get made by the fact that, like, Joe and Chris are just standing out in the open and the terrorists, like, spot them out the window.
But Gary tells a story. His story to convince the terrorist that he's actually legit is like he starts talking about like I was 8 when the infidels came to my village. Their guns lit up the sky like the eyes of Allah and shit like that.
Yeah.
But he's just been replacing the gorillas with the infidels essentially because you can still hear the monkey noise, like the chimpanzee noises in the background.
He just reaches into that deep well.
But it's at the same time, it's also like the kind of metaphor that like Joe Nobody in Iowa would probably come up with to try and say like Muslim things, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
Like he doesn't know what he's talking about, but he acts his way in there. And
yeah.
Yeah. And it's just so like generic.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
And so Team America ends up, the terrorists spot the Team America and they give chase. And throughout the chase, they manage to destroy the pyramids, the Sphinx, and Luxor, which are all within spinning distance of each other again.
Yes.
Yeah, apparently.
As well as, is Luxor that hillside complex?
That's what I'm thinking.
Is it already that or Petra? I'm not sure, because Petra's not even in Egypt.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well,
then, again,
exactly.
Adding to the whole pastiche. Not only to mention, I believe that Cairo and Giza are like quite a distance apart as well.
But who in America knows that?
Let me go ahead and look
that
up.
We know that Cairo is in Egypt, but we also know about pyramids.
The pyramids
Let's just
are
put
in
them
Egypt.
All together.
Egypt is a listen. Everybody in America knows Egypt is a country roughly the size of Rhode Island.
Exactly.
So Giza and Cairo, basically the same city.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, Cairo and the Great Pyramids of Giza are 30 minutes apart, 14 miles.
Well, okay, so that's
It's not as far as I thought, honestly.
If you're in a speeding Jeep, you could make it there, conceivably. In a minute or two. I don't know.
The Sphinx is there as well, let's not forget.
Right. But they blow the head right off the fucking Sphinx.
Yep.
So, this fucking movie, guys. The other great gag, I think, is during that chase, beforehand, they tell Gary that if he needs help, if he needs an extraction to give the signal, does he remember the signal? And the signal is just like raising his hands and like waving them like crazy, like Kermit the Frog, basically. And then he's doing it in the back of the Jeep because he's with the terrorists, and they keep looking at him like, what's that one terrorist doing with his hands?
It should also be noted as part of the disguise, everybody else is in real, tied turbans, and he's wearing a hotel towel.
I pointed this out when we were watching it, because full disclosure, we watched half of it last night and half of it this morning.
That's fair.
I was making fun of that as well. It's like, he just fucking did a towel turban, like he washed his hair.
Oh, it turns out we're the stupid Americans. Yeah, it's the Temple of Abu Simbel is what that's called, actually, not Luxor. Okay. Luxor is a slightly similar looking thing.
Womp womp.
All right.
Gotcha. Oh.
So the middle of this movie is kind of nothing, isn't it?
It's the middle of an action movie. This is some save the cat ass shit.
Yeah, there's robot porn, or not robot. There's marionette porn.
Yeah, after the successful mission,
they start
falling in love because that's what you do in a movie.
Yeah,
and
they meaning Gary and Lisa.
And she basically gives the speech about like, how can I love again after. The guy whose name I already forgot
Carson.
Died. I'm saying she already forgot. That's what I'm getting at. Okay. But anyway, he's just like, I promise I will never die. And then it cuts to a puppet sex scene, which was originally about twice as long. And it was one of the main things they had to keep cutting to get it under NC-17.
But as I read, they did that specifically on purpose to distract the MPAA from all the other awful shit in the movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they intentionally made this puppet sex scene like 5 minutes long.
Is a pretty common tactic of just making stuff super terrible and just being like, well, you got to give me something. So the shit you actually want, it gets slid in because it's like, oh, we can't cut all of it down, can we?
Right.
So the lyrics in this, there are a couple of musical numbers, which I think are...
This movie is a musical. Let's get out that part,
I mean,
too.
We need to talk about that, too, because like I feel like what Trey and Matt do better than just about anything is musical numbers.
Yeah.
The musical number during the sex scene is very good, including the line, all that I ask is that you're a woman.
And, that song, like, only a woman who plays during the sex scene... And I remember this, like, I used to have the soundtrack album to this, and in the full-length version of the song, the very last line of the song is, all I ask is that you're a woman, and then once the music cuts out, he goes,
or a man!
But they didn't include it in the movie.
Damn.
But they're always doing stuff like that. Like, sure, like, the whole joke of the song is, like, all you need is just to be a woman. But then, like, you know, not that that matters.
it's like putting the fucking plot to the movie in the end credits.
Mm-hmm.
In a song that you didn't hear.
Right.
When they
invite Gary to join the team and he's like, I need to think about this for a while. He goes on a sightseeing tour of the
DC Mall, basically.
And the song is freedom isn't free, and it's bullshit like country music lyrics about how freedom, every man in America has to pay the price of freedom, and it turns out the price of freedom is $1.05.
Yeah, it's $1.05.
But I love that scene too because it's pretty clear that like if you look at the footage, it looks different from the rest of the film, and I think it's because they just like propped the puppet up in front of the national monuments and shot it with a camcorder.
Yeah, they just went and like filmed without a permit in DC and just filmed with a puppet standing in front of things.
Yes.
That it's very good with this, especially they give you a sense of the scale, and it's one of the good puppet visual gags, I think. There's another scene later where Gary's riding his motorcycle down the street, but it's a puppet-sized motorcycle on a real street. It's pretty good.
One of my favorite jokes happens is that is when the camera pans too close and knocks the puppet over.
Yes. Yeah, I fucking loved that.
Yeah. During this scene where he's sightseeing in DC, they play with camera angles like during most of it to make Gary look at least reasonably human size, but then they just start giving up towards the end and he starts, like, they have him in Arlington Cemetery and he's leaned up against a grave and he's not even as tall as the grave. It's like, yes. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, or they just take him to like the Vietnam Memorial and they just prop him up against the wall.
Yes.
That's one of the good things with puppets. We'll get into probably my favorite thing about this movie in a bit, and I'm pretty sure you will agree with me.
Okay. Well, or we could just I don't have like a set list of notes here for the movie, because honestly, this is one of the few movies where I just said, fuck it, I'm not taking notes.
So, my favorite thing about this movie is the use of real animals.
Yes.
There's a scene where
he feeds Hans Blix to a shark.
Yeah, and it's just a catfish and
it's a
nurse shark.
Yeah, which are about as long as your forearm. That's as big as they get. You know, when I was in high school, we had a nurse shark in a tank. Yeah,
it's very good. And I assume that they just made the doll out of shark food, and the shark is just friggin' biting on the puppet. It's very good. And then there's a scene later which we'll get into, but I'll just mention it now for the sake of it. Where part of the team is trapped in like a glass cage, and he goes, "We'll see what Eel's Panthers have to do about this." And I literally said out loud, "I'm like, yes, please be yes." And then the doors open, and it's just house cats. Yes. It's so good.
My favorite perspective joke like that is when you see the inside of Kim Jong Il's palace. There's a statue of Kim Il Sung there, just a gigantic like Colossus of Rhodes that statue, and it's just a guy in a costume.
Yeah.
I didn't notice that.
Because you see his eyes blink at one point. And you're like, oh, that's just a guy in a costume.
Oh, man, I didn't notice that. And then the cockroach part at the end is also very good, because it follows like a little path to a spaceship and gets in.
Yeah, and it also, there's a bunch of just random jokes like that. Like, Carson, at the beginning, one of the items on his like tool belt is just a pair of nail clippers. But the size of it is, it looks like it's like a tool of some sort for him. And like one of them has a quarter or a dime as a belt buckle.
That's pretty great. Yeah, all the scale stuff is actually like really funny and real fun.
Also, they had to like, this had to be a puppeted movie, because if it were like real people with like CGI and special effects and shit, it would be fucking gruesome.
It would, yeah.
This movie is extremely violent.
And even as the puppets, it's kind of gruesome, because these puppets get fucking destroyed in this movie.
This is just a question. Let's pin the question to pin for later. What exactly do these guys hate about Janine Garofalo? Like that was kind of the odd person out among like their celebrity shit list.
Yeah, which we should like introduce, because I don't think we've got.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and do that. The quote unquote secondary villains of this piece are the Film Actors Guild.
Because this is 2004 and you can still get away with that kind of shit.
Yeah, just putting that acronym everywhere.
And like at a certain point in the film, they just stop calling them the Film Actors Guild and they just start using the acronym. And it's
the F slur.
It's a little jarring, if I'm going to be honest. Like, ugh, you guys are really still going to do this? Like, and then they just keep pounding that joke. But it's the Film Actors Guild is led by Alec Baldwin. Not voiced by Alec Baldwin, but... whatever.
Voice by Maurice LaMarche.
Yeah.
After what happens to Alec Baldwin in this film, I doubt Alec Baldwin would agree to
working
in this film.
He said after the fact that he loved the film, actually. And
oh, really?
I think he had worked with him before. George Clooney definitely had worked with him already, and he's one of the puppets in here.
Yeah.
And Clooney said he basically would have been offended if they had not killed him in it.
Yeah.
But one of the things that Baldwin said was that after this movie, it led to all of his daughter's friends from school, whenever they see him, just going, "You are worthless, Alec Baldwin."
Yeah.
So yeah, the Film Actors Guild is made up of Alec Baldwin. We got George Clooney, Matt Damon, Tim Robbins, Sean Penn, Helen Hunt, Susan Sarandon, Martin Sheen, Liv Tyler. I'm just reading off a list here. Janine Garofalo, Danny Glover, Ethan Hawke, and did I say
Matt Damon?
Matt Damon.
Did you?
Matt Damon.
Matt Damon.
And Sam Jackson. Sam Jackson.
I was about to say that.
The ones that aren't voiced by them, I know Maurice LaMarche does Alec Baldwin. Sam Jackson is Fred Tatasciore for whatever reason.
Sure, why not?
And I think that's it. And the Matt Damon puppet only says his own name, because after they made the puppet, they realized they made him look like a caveman. So they just leaned into it. Like, yeah, he only knows how to say his own name.
And it's kind of I want to say it's the best joke in the
movie. I laughed the first time when he said it real slow the first time. I kind of laughed.
Matt Damon.
And apparently,
I'll say this. When this movie came out, like, I was my freshman year of college. After this, anytime Matt Damon showed up in any movie that my friends and I were watching, one of us would invariably say, Matt Damon.
Oh, that still happens in my head. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
But one of the things that was cut was there was also a Ben Affleck puppet, but the joke with it was that his head was just a hand doing like a hand puppet thing, like, you know, like where you make a
Oh, that would have been so good. Like you make lips with your hand.
Yeah, like Mitch Connor from South Park, you know, like this. All right, it's all right type thing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad. But yeah, so the Film Actors Guild are in league, as it turns out, with Kim Jong Il to. What exactly are they doing? Why do they want to do this?
Well, they think that they're going to a peace summit.
Right.
Yeah, they're useful idiots.
Into it.
I mean, yeah. What this is all actually about was that the lead up to the Iraq war, instead of actually focusing on any not any pundits are any good. All political talking heads on the TV fucking suck. But instead of actually asking any of them what they thought, they just asked a bunch of celebrities, especially Sean Penn, about like what they thought about the Iraq war and why you shouldn't go and all this shit.
Right.
And it's just kind of a response to that of like celebrities not staying in their lanes, so to speak, and just getting on the fucking news yelling about foreign policy.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I feel like the only reason Janine Garofalo is in this mix is because like that's kind of her whole thing, is she's just an outspoken comedian who tends to
mouth
off about a lot of things. Not to say that she's not great, because she is, but yes, they, I guess, decided they needed one more woman in here, so let's use her.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, Trey and Matt do have a definite seething hatred for Hollywood, especially after Basketball. More or less rightfully so, they feel like they got taken for a fucking ride with Basketball is kind of what's going on. And a lot of their shit, especially in regards to on South Park, you notice how when they do have a celebrity on there, they're doing something like George Clooney voicing the dog or just jokes like that.
Yeah.
They very rarely have a celebrity on playing a main character, and they never have a celebrity play themselves because they are just so fucking like turned off on Hollywood, basically.
Yeah. So this movie is basically all of their grievances with Hollywood sort of crammed into one movie, where they get to just like make puppets of celebrities they don't like and then blow them up. Not that that's a bad impulse, it's just, like, it seems like it was kind of, I don't know, maybe it just distracts from what the actual movie's about, because, like when they take, spend so much time, like, the whole, like, third act action sequence is Team America fighting all of these celebrities.
Yes.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's, like, it's kind of a Pandora's Box thing, where once you know the subtext of it, you can't watch it without that subtext anymore. Because if you don't know about their history with Hollywood, it's kind of just like, you know, they blew up the Matt Damon.
Yeah, it's
puppet.
Just kind of a random joke. Yeah,
yeah. But instead, it's just like, wow, they're really fucking pissed off at those guys.
Yeah, and they're like, just like ripping them apart. Literally,
like one in particular, Michael Moore is kind of an interesting case here.
Yeah,
because Michael Moore in the movie, he becomes a terrorist bomber who blows up Team America headquarters,
which is inside Mount Rushmore. I don't think we ever mentioned.
No, we
that.
Didn't talk about that at all. not a bit.
And their airplane hangar is like George Washington's head opens up, and that's where the airplane hangar is.
Yeah, like each of their heads open in a different way, and like all the fucking vehicles come out.
Yeah, Michael Moore had Matt Stone on for an interview in Bowling for Columbine.
Yeah,
and then like really close to that interview in the film is sort of a South Park style animation talking about like the history of guns in America. And I remember reading a thing at the time where Matt and Trey were very angry at Michael Moore for kind of insinuating that they worked on that short.
Yeah.
By kind of making it look like their style. And so that's why they then blew him up in Team America.
Jesus.
Yeah, it was a thing where
it was more of a personal grievance than like a political one.
But as for it chumming South Park style, like to an extent, but it's one of those things where, like, we talked about this very recently, I think, on here, about how every funny song on Napster became a Weird Al song regardless of who actually made it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what happened with this too, of just like, oh, it's a funny cartoon, it must be the South Park guys.
Right. Yeah.
But then having Matt Stone in the film probably didn't help either. Like, oh, in the film, he must endorse it, right? Like, he must have had something to do.
He must have worked on this.
But no.
Yeah, it was one of those things where they didn't go. Michael Moore, it was kind of a sin of omission just about Michael Moore didn't go to any efforts to say that it wasn't a Trey and Matt joint.
Yeah.
And with it being so close to the part in the movie where he interviewed Matt Stone, like, I can see the room for confusion.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and then that kind of opens up the whole door of, like, well, Michael Moore has a history of not treating his employees properly and things like that, but we don't even need to go in there. So maybe it's good for the best that they blew him up in this movie. I don't know. At a certain point in the film, the Team America headquarters is blown up by Michael Moore while Team America is out on a mission to...
We skipped a part though because I want to talk about Panama because they cut to Panama and again it's like it is what an American would think Panama looks like if all they've seen is like 20 minutes of Rambo basically.
Yeah, it's basically the Panama Canal.
Yeah, it's just the canal.
It's not just the canal. It's the canal, but also like a bunch of shit that looks like it's from 1960.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah,
it's like you see like 10 shacks and like people like. It just looks like I said, it looks like some 60s movie just about.
Yeah. There's a guy playing the steel drums because we're in the Caribbean.
Right.
Yeah. And one of the WMDs blows up and destroys the Panama Canal and floods all of the people there.
And there are just like bodies everywhere. Again, gruesome.
And it's one thing where if you just replace the bodies with actual like humans, then it's like, oh, this is just the day after tomorrow now.
Yeah. Which is specifically what they wanted to do in the first place was like they wanted to do it to do an all puppet version of The Day After Tomorrow.
Yeah, when on the making of DVD, they claimed that what their original idea was to just do a shot for shot remake of Armageddon, but they couldn't do it because Michael Bay was a dick and wouldn't sell them the script.
But then, like after like subsequent to that, they were like, "Well, let's do The Day After Tomorrow," and their lawyer specifically said, "No, do not do this." So, Team America.
Yeah, but yeah, then in response to that, Gary realizes that his acting got more people killed, so he quits the team. And then they go out on the mission, and while on the mission, Michael Moore shows up and suicide bombs, and he breaks their computer, which we didn't mention is named Intelligence, which is an acronym that's never defined.
Yeah.
But that they can do the joke at the later, when the computer blows up, and then the team says, we have no intelligence.
Yes, exactly. And Intelligence just sounds like a kind of a dumb, like, dude.
I think the subtitle specifically said lazy stoner voice.
Yeah.
Okay, it's Phil Hendry, but I for some reason I thought it was Judah Friedlander. Like these two names, like I don't know if those mean anything to anybody, but whatever.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's that kind of voice. You know.
Yeah.
Right.
Judah Friedlander is that guy who's so funny that he doesn't have to actually bother taking a shower, basically.
Exactly.
Like, whenever I see Judah Friedlander or anything, I'm just like, how are you allowed on TV?
I think it's part of the bit, and it's very good, yeah. I must say.
Yes.
But, anyway, the first time I went to Germany was in 2005, and one of the first things I remember seeing there when I got to the town I was staying was on the bus station, like, on a light pole outside of it, someone had plastered a ton of Team America stickers.
Oh, God.
And they all just said, we have no intelligence.
That's beautiful.
That's a good thing to see getting into Europe.
But yeah, that's kind of another weird thing about this, because it seems like, for the most part, a lot of people worldwide got the joke of the movie was that Americans are stupid, loud idiots. But then the Americans were just kind of like, we like it unironically.
Yeah.
You know, this is,
we love being stupid, loud idiots.
The song is about us, right? America, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Because then Gary goes to a bar and he gets a speech from a drunk about the three types of people in the world.
You're either a dick, an asshole, or a pussy.
Do we actually need to explain it, or no?
I mean, it seems fairly obvious, but it'll come back later.
Yeah.
Yeah. The gist of it is that if that pussies don't like dicks because dicks just fuck everything, but you need dicks to fuck the assholes, otherwise everything's just covered in shit.
That's that
is
you did it pretty good. That's the just the Cliff Notes version. Yeah.
Then Gary,
he gets kicked out of the bar, and Brad had just eaten a bunch of pasta, and then this scene came up.
Brad, tell us about your experience with this scene.
I'm not grossed out easily, but I'd just eaten a big bowl of pasta, and he throws up for the, like, they have the puppet just spraying out vomit-colored water for about a good minute and a half.
Yes.
And
yes.
The musical cue is actually pretty funny because the musical swell every time he's vomiting.
Yeah.
And then it'll quiet down, and then he'll start vomiting again.
Right.
It was funny.
Sorry.
Yeah.
He would collapse off screen and then come back.
Yes, and then it got more violent as it went on, and then he passes out in a puddle of his own vomit. It's a funny scene, but it's also, I'm not grossed out easily, but it was really gross. But I think I had literally just finished eating like maybe 30 seconds before this scene, that's why I was a little grossed out.
It reminds me of the vomiting scene in Super Troopers, where they're at the party and Farva is just over drinking, and it's just where there's several different plots going on at once in like split screen. And just to get, what's his name, Heffernan, to throw up on cue, he just literally just ate, like, a huge bag of M&Ms and drank as much beer as he could keep down.
Jesus. That sounds like a bad time.
There's another really good, like, detail in the vomiting, at the end of the vomiting scene when it, like, cuts to the overhead shot of Gary just lying in a pool of his own blech. It's not a puppet. It's actually Trey Parker dressed up to look like the puppet.
Oh, really?
Because they wanted to get the perspective right. So they put like a wig and like fake legs on him, and so that he looks like the puppet from way up high.
Oh my god, I didn't realize that.
Interesting.
Like we keep coming back to it, but like the attention to detail like that. I think it's why they refused to make another movie, because this must have driven them crazy.
Yeah, like, there is. Yeah, like there's another good thing too as far as the attention to detail. I'll just go ahead and bring it up. I'm sorry, I'm stepping on John. The scene, there's a little bit later. What's the main office guy's name again?
Spotswood. We hadn't even talked about Spotswood yet.
Spotswood convinces Gary to give him a blowjob to show his commission or his commitment to the team.
Yeah,
and Gary goes completely off screen, and they could have just not moved the puppet, but they actually like moved the strings around, and I get the feeling that the puppeteers were actually like making him look like he was giving a blowjob.
Yeah.
And you only see the strings moving around, and it's a pretty good little detail, and it's kind of funny.
Another thing where apparently in the Korean scenes, I missed it this time, but it was the thing I remember for the making of, now that I think about it, where a lot of the movies were just Chinese takeout food. A lot of the buildings were just Chinese takeout food containers.
Oh my god.
And it's those kind of details where like there, it's clearly not just, I don't think it's a racist joke. I think it's just, I don't know.
It's,
I don't know what, how I feel about that,
and
to be honest,
it's a visual gag, and it is kind of a race.
It's a little bit of a racist
joke.
Yeah.
But the joke they're going for is that, oh, we're dumb Americans. How do we know the difference?
Yeah.
It's somewhere in Asia. It's all, it's what we know about Asia, kind of pastiche thing.
Right.
Like, it can kind of go both ways.
Sort of, yeah.
I feel like you should, in this day and age, you should definitely err on the side.
You should know better, but
not
but
doing
2000,
that.
But 2004 was 2004. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it,
I'm not trying to excuse it, but
yeah,
it does lend credence to the pastiche thing with the whole Chi Pao and all of that business as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And but then Gary ends up going back to Mount Rushmore and sees that it's just a huge fucking mess and goes in and finds Spotswood. And at this point, Team America has been captured. So then Spotswood says, like, I don't know if I can trust you anymore. The only way I can trust you is if you perform oral sex on me. And then that scene Brad described happens.
Yeah.
And then one of the things the cut scenes in the DVD happens next is because then it's one of those things where I it's at first you'd like, why did they cut that? It doesn't seem any worse than the rest of it. And then you realize kind of like why, because it's just one line. Because then he says like, you know, come on, we have to train you. We don't have much time. We have to make you the perfect soldier. And then the cut line is afterwards he says, and it's going to be a little harder now because now you're gay.
Oh, God.
And it's just, it's not necessarily any worse than the rest of the movie, you know? And it's like, why did you cut that? And it's like, because people just unironically thought that.
Yeah.
And still think that in this day.
Right,
age.
Like, even in 2004, right. you don't need to say the joke because everyone's already thinking it, which is kind of terrible.
Well, no, I mean...
Well, not everybody, joke, you know what I mean, like...
Yeah, it's a joke, but there's enough people who wouldn't get that, who would think, yeah, the joke is that he's gay now, rather than the joke is that Spotswood said a horrible thing.
Yeah.
You don't want to give them any more ammo than they already have.
Precisely. Right. That's exactly what it is,
And then it cuts to the montage scene, set to a slightly new version of the montage song.
It's my favorite.
Yeah, it's great. And it's like we said, it's kind of ported over from the South Park episode where Stan has to learn to ski really good to beat the hotshot skier in Aspen. And they just kind of change a couple of the words around and they reuse it in this scene. And I think it works better in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it totally just breaks down the notion of, like, you know, the cinematic, like, training montage where they talk about how it works and why things work the way they do. Like,
they mentioned
like
Rocky
very
by name,
self-referential,
but also the song sounds so similar to Take It to the Limit from Scarface, which is the montage song in Scarface.
Exactly. Yeah. My favorite detail in that is like, it's at the end where they go like, always fade out in a montage. When you fade out, it seems like more time has passed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's true. It works. And they do it in the film and it works.
Yep.
They betray this a little later, I think, in the movie, and when they mention that it only all that whole montage took place over the course of one night.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Disregarding its own rules, even.
After that happens, fucking Gary shows up in North Korea.
Where they're having the peace summit, which is where Kim Jong-il and the Kim Jong-il is basically using the Film Actors Guild as useful idiots. They're having a world peace summit, inviting all the world leaders there, so that once all the world leaders are gathered together, he can bomb the rest of the world, I guess?
Yeah, he can, like, instruct a network of, like, terrorists to bomb everywhere.
Right.
But my stupid thing that happened was when Gary shows up, he fucking Jedi mind tricks.
Yeah, it's literally it's literally Luke showing up at Jabba's palace in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, the big sort of final shootout of the film happens where he breaks into the palace, he breaks out Team America, and,
the cat scene happens, the cat scene mentioned, and then...
Oh.
And then they kill almost all the puppets.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, but, like, when he breaks out the rest of the team, they're like, we don't know if we can trust you. And then Spotswood comes on the radio and says, no, he sucked my dick last night.
Yeah. Spotswood mentions it several times that, like, that's why he knows he can trust Gary, because Gary's the kind of guy that'll just suck you off. and also,
like,
mentioned,
okay, that's good enough for me.
And also, Spotswood is in like a is almost always depicted in a chair that like is motorized and rolls around, holding a drink, and the chair is never not moving.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's a good gag.
Yeah,
I like that one.
I think that's another thing I remember. Like, they had a problem with the chair's like motor at one point, so they just decided, fuck it, the chair is always just spinning around, like going crazy.
Yeah.
Put him upside down at one point.
Yes, exactly. He just goes from one side of the screen to the other, like, across the top.
And he always has a drink in his hand, too, another good gag.
So, yeah, so this final fight scene where they destroy the Film Actors Guild is, I don't want to say it's brutal because it's puppets, but at the same time,
it is
like...
brutal.
Like, there's
it's like you guys just shot that puppet with a grenade launcher, pretty much.
Right.
Well, there's like the one where I think it's Janine Garofalo. They shoot her in the head, and then the puppet's face like deforms into this horrifying grimace, and it's kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
Because the head like deflated.
They literally blow the head up, and it's just like horrifying.
Yeah.
I really loved the dumb Matrix gag, which I think even at the time was a tired cliche, was the Matrix gag.
Yeah.
But the way they do the Matrix gag is they just pick the puppets off the air and just spin the puppets in circles.
Yes. Mm.
And that's another thing too. Like there really isn't much like fight choreography in the film. There's the one scene where the two female puppets are like sword fighting, and it kind of looks good because they know when to cut it so that it doesn't look stupid. Yeah. But then there's the two guys fighting, and they just mash the puppets into each other.
Yeah, which is a running gag because they do that at the Paris scene too.
Right.
He like fist fights a terrorist puppet, and it's just they just smack the puppets into each other for a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yes. Me too.
So the final standoff happens where Gary gets on stage at this peace summit with Alec Baldwin, and he's terrified because Alec Baldwin is his favorite actor, and Alec Baldwin's giving his speech about the world peace and all this stuff, and then Gary has to come along and he gives the big dicks, pussies, and assholes speech, and you know Team America, he's like, you know, we know that we're Team America is a bunch of dicks, we know that, but Alec Baldwin's a pussy, and Kim Jong-il is an asshole, and we have to fucking stop Alec Baldwin, because if we don't, then Kim Jong-il will just shit all over everything. That's basically his speech at the end. And then everyone claps, and like, oh, he's the best actor we've ever seen. It's just kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
And then Kim Jong-il falls off the balcony.
Kim Jong-il shoots Alec Baldwin for being worthless.
Right.
Yeah. And then Lisa, who is captured behind him wearing a kippah, is that what it's called? Which, if you don't know what that is, it's the Chun-Li dress, just to sum it up.
Oh, kippah. Yeah.
And she kicks him off the balcony, and he falls and lands headfirst on the German, like, Chancellor's Pickelhaube, which is, like, 9 feet tall.
Yes.
Because anything worth doing in this film is worth overdoing.
Yeah. And then a cockroach comes out of his mouth and gets in a spaceship and flies off.
My favorite plot point.
And then Team America goes into their like hero pose. They smash open the doors, getting ready to fight, and then credits.
Yes.
And then
you have to watch the credits because they play like a little bit of all the songs, and then they play the cockroach song.
Yeah, You Are Worthless Alec Baldwin song, which is only played in the credits because it's about the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And I don't think it's even on the soundtrack. Like, it's only in the movie.
Oh, wow.
I could be wrong, but I think it's only in the movie. But yeah, that's Team America World Police. It's a really... Yeah, if you're going into this looking for some neat puppet action, like, you know, they did a really good job with it, but I don't know that the comedy holds up quite as well in 2018 as it did in 2004.
Right,
and that's kind
of I think it's funny maybe for like different reasons than they might have originally. They might have originally intended.
Yeah.
I do very like. Okay, I found the lyrics to "You're Worthless, Alec Baldwin," and I want to read the middle verse, which is one of my favorite like kind of things that recurs on South Park. Because whenever aliens come up, they just spend the time thinking up more ridiculous names for them, like the Marklars and everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
So here's verse two of the "You're Worthless, Alec Baldwin" song. Planet Gyron is inhabited with Zypods like me, but also with Balmax, who are giant bees. The Zypeds and the Balmax are at constant war, so we wanted a new home, and that's what Earth was for.
I mean, musical numbers in this movie, great for the most part.
Animal actors, fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yes. Give it up for the animal actors.
I was so excited to see the cats. That's my favorite.
But yeah, for the most part, I feel like the music and the puppetry is where this movie really shines. Everything else, I could take or leave. Honestly, yeah. I might leave most of it. Yeah. So the final question I guess we have to ask about Team America is, let's go over to the Yankometer, which is the tiny offshoot of the Crankometer, and talk about how patriotic this movie is on an X and Y axis. X axis, uh-huh. Hey guys, how patriotic is Team America World Police, unironically or not?
Extremely.
This is a tough question, because you have to, it's hard to separate the iron, it's... With Stone and Parker, how do you separate the irony from the not irony, you know?
I think that they're it's still extremely patriotic, even, like, making fun of it. It's still one of those, like...
Yeah, I mean, it's like they've said themselves, it's having their cake and eating it, too. They can say all this horrible, heinous shit as long as they pretend to also be mortified at it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, in that case, then, I guess it's extremely patriotic. Because what's more patriotic than trying to hand-wave away all of the terrible things about our country?
That's at the very point. Least, extremely jingoistic.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd almost give it a 4 or 5 on that, in that case.
Absolutely a 5.
Here's the problem with giving it a 5 is does it have the scene in Street Fighter where Jean-Claude Van Damme, like, punches a guy and then immediately flexes and there's a American flag tattoo on his bicep?
Jean-Claude Van Damme.
As Guile.
Extremely American.
You know, as Guile, yes.
You're right. It's a four. Like,
yep.
Fair enough, y'all. You know, fair enough.
I'll give it a four.
Good lord. Yeah.
Like, you have to meet or beat that scene to get a five, and I don't think much things can.
Hey, John, here's a question. Would we ever watch Street Fighter for July at Christmas?
It's not off the table.
Okay.
Yes.
Right. The thing is, though,
you heard it here first.
We still have to watch
Christmas.
White House Down first. Like, we were almost going to watch White House Down for this until John said, hey, no, let's do Team America instead.
Yeah, White House Down is a good one. We're not watching Olympus Has Fallen, though. Motherfuck to that movie.
No, good God, no. I even feel like we've mentioned both of those movies on the show before in tandem.
Yeah, we have.
So, yeah.
We have.
So then the y-axis on the Yankometer, how good is Team America really? this is the tough one for me because, like, as kind of reprehensible as some of the humor is now, I can still appreciate a good puppet joke, you know?
Well, some of it is very, very fucking good, and some of it is just very bad is the problem.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of like a delicious pile of food that also has shit mixed in.
Yeah.
It's like, it's so hard. I would almost say it's carbon neutral, maybe a point towards the negative, because the jokes that have not aged well have aged extremely not well.
Yeah, my problem is that with the jokes that haven't aged well, they're still funny jokes. It's just, in retrospect, you realize, like, oh, these guys actually just unironically thought this. Yikes.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly.
Like it still is funny just on a kind of like a...
It's like a meta, like, level of,
yeah,
like, funny.
Like, even just the fact that they just call them the Film Actors Guild for the sake of the acronym. It's funny that they're going to be that on the nose and coarse about it.
Yeah.
But then you realize that some people just thought it was funny because they said the word that we call the guy we don't like at school.
Yeah. Exactly. And there's even like made up swears that they make up for this film that I'm not going to repeat here specifically because they incorporate that word and it's just,
yeah.
Ugh. Oh yeah, they do incorporate a lot of compound swears.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
with the F slur in it.
But I would still say, in light of all that, I would still be willing to give it a one or two.
Yeah, I would give it at least a point.
It is not aged well. If you watched it, Brad, was this the first time you'd watched it?
This is the first time I've seen it, which is why I would go, I'm leaning towards the negative.
Yeah,
I would say, like, negative one or zero.
I would say if you missed it when it first came out, and you don't have, like, the frame of... I'm not saying this is a detriment to you. Like, if you don't have the original frame of reference, though, it's hard to, like...
No, I understand where you're coming from, and I grew up in that age, and not excusing anything, where...
As I'm saying, if you kind of missed the boat the first time around, you're gonna be a bit lost on some of it, because you do have to have a specific kind of, it's kind of like trying to watch Birth of a Nation anymore, not the original Griffith one. Like, you have to get going to the mindset of, like, you're watching this because this is impressive filmmaking, everything else about it is just horrible bullshit.
Right, yeah. But I mean, Team America, I get what you're saying. Like, in its time, in 2004, this was kind of a sensation, not a sensation in the sense that it made money, because it kind of didn't, but it was a sensation in the case of, like, you know, people really, the ones who saw it really kind of went crazy for the shots that it took at, you know, political figures and whatnot. But
watching it
in a vacuum in 2018 is a very different experience than watching it in 2004 when all this was actually kind of relevant.
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah, that's why I would go for a negative one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I'm the one, the tiebreaker
here.
Let's
give it a zero.
Okay. Let's give it a zero.
Yeah. Just everything cancels each other out.
Carbon neutral movie.
Yep.
Not,
super
not
patriotic,
really at all,
yet,
but
super carbon neutral. No, it's totally not carbon neutral, because I feel like Matt and Trey still think that climate change isn't real.
Oh yeah.
Oh, are they denialists? Really? I didn't know that.
Back in the day, their position on climate change was basically like, sure, climate change probably exists, but we almost definitely don't have anything to do with it.
What?
And, like, only in the last like, the, month or so.
That was the entire man-bear pig. Like, yeah. Man-bear pig is literally a metaphor for climate change.
Yeah, but like only in the last month or so, like they addressed that on an episode where like they brought back man-bear pig and they kind of said, well, maybe we were wrong about man-bear pig as a metaphor for saying, oh, maybe we were wrong about climate change.
All right, well, at least they're willing to admit that they were wrong. Not that that's, I mean, they probably did some damage.
Yeah.
Oh, like, doing like, that. The whole idea of, like, South Park Republicans, like, taking the wrong messages
from the
show.
Yeah,
like,
I was going to say that. Yeah, like,
damage. Yeah.
Yeah, like, Andrew Sullivan go jump in a lake.
Yeah, for real. It's kind of hard to be a South Park fan in the year 2018, you know?
Yeah, it's especially really funny because the guy who coined South Park Republican, Andrew Sullivan, is now just an out-and-out racist.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
So that's Team America for you, Booker. So take this to the Yankometer. Give it a 5-0 on the old Yankometer there.
What a score.
Hell yes. So we've got before we close out this show, we've got a little bit of listener feedback to address.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned this before we started recording.
Yeah, we'll do that one first. I put out a call on Twitter for some Christmas movie-related questions, and I only got one, but I think it's a doozy.
Okay.
From our friend on Twitter, at TarsTarkusNet, asks, could E.T. defeat Santa?
You know what? I've never seen E.T.
Okay, here's the problem. Is that my view on E.T. is very heavily influenced by Robot Chicken.
Okay.
Specifically the sketch where the joke was that, like, E.T. is, like, the idiot of his species. And that's why his species left him on Earth, because they got tired of dealing with his bullshit.
So, I think the easiest way to do this is with the empirical method.
Okay.
Let's list out E.T.'s powers.
Okay.
He loves Reese's Pieces.
Uh-huh.
Right? Okay. That's first.
Santa Claus loves cookies.
Santa Claus loves one bite out of a cookie.
Yeah.
E.T. also has a magical finger, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
A magical finger that heals minor cuts, as I recall.
His finger glows. Did he?
Santa Claus?
And he can make lighter objects, such as a boy on a bicycle, slowly descend against the force of gravity, right?
Correct.
Santa Claus, depending on the mythos that we're looking at, but largely we know, he has omnipotent.
He has a magical sack.
He has a magical sack, a bag of holding type object.
Uh-huh.
He can travel at super speed.
Yes.
He has a legion of elves at his disposal.
And also reindeer.
Eight tiny reindeer.
And also reindeer.
Flying reindeer.
He's also a 250-pound, at least, if not, like, 400-pound man and who's lived for over 1,000 years.
Yes.
Okay, here's the problem. We got to go, like, Fox Only Know Why I'm Final Destination on this. You can't include like, all of Santa's equipment and everything like that, because... It's very clearly no contest. Santa wins either way. But Santa wins in a fucking landslide if he's allowed to, like, have reindear in his sleigh and his elves and shit.
So this is a cape.
Superman versus Batman, where, like, if you take all Batman's shit away, he's just, like, a fucking dude and Superman is actually magical.
Hang on a second. Wait a minute here.
Okay, all right.
Because if Santa Claus gets all of his special bag of toys and whatnot, E.T. at his disposal has a team of angry teenagers on bicycles.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Well, Santa's just going to give them all coal for Christmas and... You know,
what
they're
then?
Taking care of.
Well, you know what? A teenager with a sock and a bunch of coal is a dangerous weapon. What are you talking about?
All right. If there's a jail cell and Santa and E.T. are locked up inside, both in orange jumpsuits, E.T.'s is a little... They had to like, just basically give him the shirt because he's weird.
I was going to ask if it was, like, specially tailored for him.
No, they don't have the resources for that. They just gave him the top and just rolled with it.
All
right. He had to roll the sleeves up a bit.
So,
who wins?
He's Donald Ducking it.
Yep.
Well,
he's got
E.T.
Donald Ducking it.
E.T. cannot escape from the cell on his own. Santa just puts a finger to the size of his nose and floats the fuck away.
Well, yeah, but also E.T.'s got that long, fragile-looking, slender neck. I'm gonna go Santa on a, in a landslide, even with all resources stripped away.
Yes.
So when Santa puts a finger to his nose and then like does magical stuff, is that supposed to be code for like Santa likes Coke?
Oh, good God, yes. Of course it is. Like,
is that
no question.
How he gets so much done?
That's why he lives at the North Pole.
He loves all that white powder. Mm-hmm.
He's a snow bunny.
He gets so much shit done.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
Like, how do you think? How do you think he gets all done in one night?
Santa loves cocaine. And also he's in the Coca-Cola ads. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
So it yeah. all fits together.
There you have it.
It all fits together. Santa Claus, his magical like Coke finger and E.T.'s magical heel finger are completely at odds here.
So then the real question is, what's more powerful, healing or cocaine?
Cocaine.
Okay.
Cocaine.
So Santa wins.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. He's also a full-grown man.
It wasn't even going to be a fight. It was going to be, why would E.T. want to hurt Santa Claus? If anything, he would use his magical finger to cure Santa's diabetes that he definitely suffers from.
Right, and Santa doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, like, well, I mean, you have to say why. I was like, well, why does Pikachu want to fight Samus? It doesn't matter why. They're going to, because that's who I picked.
So are you saying that E.T. and Santa Claus are the two newest, like, Super Smash Brothers?
Yeah, I am saying that E.T. and Santa will both be in Smash before Waluigi will be, and that's a fucking injustice.
You know what? And there's precedent for this, because if Santa Claus shows up in the new Smash, he's going to be Sumo Santa from Clay Fighter. I almost feel like that's a certainty. We need to start bringing Clay Fighter characters into the Smashverse.
Yes.
The one problem is Clay Fighter is rare, isn't it?
No, it's Interplay. It's Midway.
Okay. Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. So
it is rare in that it's hard to find.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which also, like, if you bring in the fucking Clay Fighters, then you get access to Earthworm Jim and Booger Man, and now we got a party going.
Oh, hell yeah.
And now I'm the asshole that brought in video games, so you know what? Game over.
It's video game chat.
Game over, everybody.
Somebody
did it.
You did it.
Cyberbully Joseph now.
Actually, you know what? You didn't. Jonathan made video game chat happen.
He did.
Yeah, he brought up Pikachu and Samus.
Okay, fair enough.
Yes,
I tried, Brad. I'm sorry. I tried. Tried to take the heat
off. You don't
have
to apologize to me. Apologize to the listeners.
John and Karen, we're not going to have it.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
Hey, fuck you, listener. We're talking about video games now.
Video games.
Sorry, but I do have one actual listener email that we received that I need to address before the end of the show here. We got another email from our buddy Jacob over in Europe.
Hi, Jacob.
It's been a year since he's...
Hi.
I'll just read it verbatim. It has been exactly a year since I wrote to you, and since I naturally have nothing better to do, I decided I'd make it an annual tradition. I've just finished listening to the last episode of Eight Crazy Nights, and boy, was it a doozy. But I have to say my favorite one of the entire year was Jingle All the Way, which is a movie I actually watch every single Christmas season. Never sober, fear not. Lately, I actually find myself constantly saying, Arnold's after that toy again, when I have to do something mundane. So thanks a lot for making me come off as even weirder than before.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And then Jacob goes on to tell us about how he discovered our show last year on a road trip through the United States, and closely associates certain stops along his way with the episodes he listened to at the time.
Oh, awesome.
He says, I actually associate episodes with places I've been to. Batman Returns brings me back to Vancouver. Jack Frost 2 is the Golden Gate Bridge. And worst of all, I will never again be able to reminisce about Los Angeles without thinking about fucking I'll Be Home for Christmas. Jacob, from the bottom of my heart, I am sorry.
I'm so sorry.
He also, for the second year in a row, says we should do Santa's Sleigh, which we definitely should get to some of these listener requests in the coming year, because they're starting to pile up, and I feel bad about it.
Yeah, we need to actually listen to our listeners.
The thing is, though, listeners, I'm sorry, but we kind of fly by the seat of our pants with this show. We don't even know what we're doing until like a week or two out.
We need to have better discipline.
Okay.
Like I said earlier in the show, this was supposed to be an episode about White House Down, and then John called an audible and said, no, we're doing Team America now.
Yeah. I mean,
whether
I think
or not we will get to Santa's sleigh is kind of a crapshoot. I'm just going to say, be honest here.
We'll do it.
We'll totally do it. Like, we're not going to not do it, but it might not be the next episode. It's definitely not the next episode.
Yeah.
No, the next episode is...
Yeah,
just that out.
We're throwing that out. No, I'm calling this. The next episode is... We're watching...
No, but no, Joe, keep it in, but just beep every time that he says that.
Yeah, actually do that, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, man. So, yeah, this has been Christmas Creeps. Thank you, by the way, Jacob, for that lovely email. And hey, please, don't let it be another year before we hear from you. You know, write to us again soon.
We have some other business real quick that I have to talk about.
Oh, do you?
Yes, I do.
Oh, boy. Business.
So I want to say it has come to my attention from the fact that I was looking at CNN, and apparently this is what CNN has to report on right now, is that you can rent the Christmas Story house as like a bed and breakfast.
What?
And even more importantly than that is if you're like, fuck that, I don't want to stay in Ralphie's house, you can stay in the Bumpus house instead.
Oh, my.
Can you stay in the Bumpus house and send a bunch of dogs next door? To, like, troll whoever's staying at Ralphie's house.
That sounds excellent. That's in Cincinnati or Pittsburgh? Cleveland. I forget. Cleveland.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been there. It's kind of neat. It's kind of neat. And if you're going there the right day, Randy will be there to give you a tour himself. Because
yes.
That's kind of his life now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It says, sorry, there are no hound dogs on the property. You cannot bring your own. They have a bad reputation of stealing our turkey.
I would love it, though, if, like, they allow people to stay in each one, and it's just, like, an eternal war between whoever's staying in the Bumpus' house and whoever's staying in Ralphie and Randy's house.
See, if you stay in the Bumpus house, I feel like your wake-up call in the morning would be somebody paid to come to your house and just scream, sons of bitches, and you get up.
Yes.
Oh, man. So yeah, is there any other business before we close out this Christmas episode of Christmas Creeps?
I'm just looking at the Bumpus house still. 195 per night and up.
Damn.
Dang.
Dang. Well, if that's all we have, I guess I'll have to start closing the show out now. So okay. If you, like Jacob, have anything to email us about, questions or comments or recommendations for future episodes, you can email those to us at xmascreeps@gmail.com. You can go to Twitter and follow us on Twitter at Christmas Creeps. Go to Facebook.com and follow us there at Christmas Creeps. We don't use Facebook so much anymore, but it's still there, and I check it just in case.
It's there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's there if you need it. And what else? Oh, yeah, we're on iTunes, we're on Stitcher, we're on Google Play, we're on YouTube. I want to say to one of our friends, Leo, specifically asked us to list our show on YouTube, and I don't think he actually uses it, because we don't have very many views on YouTube. So please, aww, follow us on YouTube and watch and or listen to the show there,
yeah.
If you feel like it. Leo, we did it for you.
We did it for you.
Leo also asked that we do Biodome sometime, and John's going to fight me until we finally do.
Yeah.
Biodome is necessarily a Christmas movie because it takes place from one Earth Day to the next Earth Day. Christmas is included in that somewhere.
Yeah, it's right in the middle.
Yes. Almost. I'm honestly surprised that Biodome doesn't have a Christmas scene in it, to be honest.
Huh.
Because it seems like having Pauly Shore be an asshole around a Christmas tree is just like... It's right there. The scene writes itself.
Yeah, it's a waste of Pauly Shore.
Which reminds me, there's got to be a Pauly Shore Christmas movie out there, doesn't there?
Has to be.
I don't know.
That's gonna do it. The last thing I'll say is, you know, we are a member of the Christmas Podcast Network. If you are interested in listening to more holiday-themed podcasts, go there. Go to ChristmasPodcastNetwork.com. There's 10 shows. There's 9 shows just like ours, or different, or what have you.
Less swearing.
All guaranteed less swearing than us.
Yes.
If that's your jam. You know, if you're interested in in a podcast about Christmas music, might I recommend Tinsel Tunes, hosted by Dwayne Bailey, who digs into the history of some of your favorite Christmas music. He's on, I think, 7 or 8 episodes in right now. You can find him at tinseltunes.com or the Christmas Podcast Network. Lots of other great shows there, like Hallmark and Jess, Advent Calendar House. It's a 90s Christmas podcast. If you want your Christmas podcast specifically in the 90s zone, they got that for you, too.
Nice.
We'll see you next week for our New Year's Eve episode, as John alluded to a little bit earlier. And final thoughts, I just want to give a special thanks to Johnny Five, Karen Five, and Bradford for being here with me on this lovely Christmas day.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Thank you guys so much.
Thanks for
Merry
having
Christmas
us.
And happy Merry holidays, Christmas, everybody, to everyone.
And a Merry Christmas and happy holidays to all of you and to all of our guests from the past year. A special thanks to Marty Schneider, Libby Cudmore, Lonzo Duraldi, Booker. If you're out there listening, you were on the show. Remember that? That was fun. We should do that again sometime. That's all I got, folks. So have a happy holidays, a Merry Christmas. We will see you bright and early on New Year's Eve. So good God, I'm ready to go drink.
Hey. Joyeux Noel.
See you next year.
Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas.
You love Christmas, sure, but sometimes the same old traditions are too traditional. Sometimes you want to see Santa stuff a kid in his sack. Sometimes you want Christmas dinner to come alive and threaten you with knives and forks. Sometimes you just need Christmas to get a bit weird. Weird Christmas has you covered. Check out podcasts filled with annoying Christmas music, proof that Saint Nick came from magic mushrooms, and talk about Christmas specials so disturbing you won't sleep for days.
Now available on iTunes and SoundCloud.
WeirdChristmas.com. Oh, holy Mary, that's different.